Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Veritas. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
The home mortgage industry is big and complicated, and it entails trillions of dollars annually. At the center of it all is the Federal Housing Finance Agency, which regulates federal home loan banks and the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac organizations. Ransomware could be a really big problem. For how the FHFA deals with this and cybersecurity in general, I spoke with its Chief Information Security Officer, Ralph Mosios.
The Federal Housing Finance Agency, or FHFA as you like to refer to, is our mission is really to ensure that Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the federal home loan banks operate in a safe and sound manner, right? So they provide a reliable source of liquidity and funding for housing finance and community reinvestment. So if you combine all of these entities together, they provide over $7 trillion in funding for the U.S. mortgage markets and the financial institutions. Now, fortunately for me, I only have to worry about my network. I don't have to worry about the regulated entities, if you would. So my life is just a little bit easier. I don't have to worry about $7 trillion worth of funds.
Right. And what sorts of data then? What are the maybe characterize the data stores that you do oversee that you have in house that you want to protect?
Well, I certainly like to protect my network and on our systems, right? We do collect a lot of data and information from these regulated entities, anonymized loan level information, but we also collect a lot of publicly available data because we use some of the information to develop policy statements, right? And to help guide and regulate these entities as well. So we do collect a lot of information from these regulated entities as well as use publicly available information, right? Housing data, where are the markets going, instead of the housing market.
Yeah, so decision-related data, and also to some degree there might be personally identifiable information among there that you would take from the entities.
We try to minimize the personally identifiable information, but for the most part, large organizations tend to have their own personally identifiable information, right, from human resources, right, from our own people as well. And we also try to minimize how we mix and combine data, too. If you have a data element that's not necessarily sensitive, but if you combine it with a number of different other sources, it can be personally identifiable information. So,
sure. So you've got data assets you need to protect, and you want to go ahead and do that. And in the ransomware field in particular that seems to be bedeviling the cybersecurity industry so much, a lot of the attacks and attempted attacks come through phishing. So what sorts of programs, policies do you have in place for your employees to make sure that phishing is not successful there?
Oh, absolutely. Phishing is probably the number one threat vector. What we do is we have a very robust phishing campaign. We conduct routine phishing exercises to train and educate our users. Again, it's the most cost-effective way is to train our end users, right? A would-be cyber criminal can distribute hundreds of thousands of emails, and it's pretty easy to catch end users off guard. So we conduct these phishing tests. We monitor the metrics. We change it up every month. We target specific groups to ensure that they are not clicking on attachments, not clicking on links in emails. And we also have some other capabilities as well. So we protect our email systems with a number of different technologies. I won't bother you with the details on some of those technologies, but we do employ a lot of them. So we want to limit the amount of spam that comes into the organization.
Can you reveal whether you use the DMARC system, for example, to keep email from that minimizes phishing, at least?
Yes, we do. I mean, we certainly use DMARC as well as a number of other preventative measures to secure email, right? Everything from, you know, SPF, which is Sender and Policy Framework. You just talked about DMARC. There's other technologies such as DKIM or Domain Keys. Identified Mail, which is the acronym to prevent spoofing. So all of these things, and these are general best practices for organizations to deploy, right? They're fairly effective, but again, it's not 100% effective against preventing, but it does reduce the attack surface for our end users.
So there's an element of training there then that's also required because, as you say, something is going to get through eventually.
Oh, absolutely, right? Again, I've talked about training and training and education, its most effective way. Besides the phishing tests, we do provide literature and information to our end users on what the threat is, We have annual training, general cybersecurity training, that we emphasize phishing as well. What is the implications of phishing? I mean, the government standard, as a matter of fact, we get measured on phishing metrics. The government standard is to keep that click rate at 10% or below.
Got it. And do you ever send out test emails that when they click on something, say, hey, it's Ralph? No.
Well, I don't use my name in the emails, but for the most part, my end users do know where it's coming from my office, right? We do these routines. We do monthly phishing tests to our users, and we target and we change up. We do certainly change up the subject matter to make it interesting.
Sure. So then it sounds like you kind of have a playbook that you run continuously.
Absolutely. Yes, it is a part of our campaign.
And any other protective practices? Just give us a sense of the general cybersecurity framework there.
Well, I think probably the best thing you can do is what I like to refer to as cyber hygiene, is ensuring that you have a good vulnerability management program. So if you're not patching your systems, you're going to be vulnerable to ransomware attacks and other malicious software, if you would. So vulnerability management is certainly a pet peeve of mine. I like to make sure that we patch our systems. An organization cannot control the number of vulnerabilities they have, but you certainly can reduce the time to patch those systems based on risk level. So that's part of my overall cyber hygiene program.
And as one of the smaller federal agencies, what is your practice with respect to data centers versus cloud, commercial cloud computing? What's your architecture for that end of things?
Well, we certainly have a hybrid environment. We certainly moved to the cloud a number of years ago when we moved our public website to the cloud, and then we have certainly moved some of our tools for our end users into the cloud. It's a hybrid environment.
Got it. So that the cloud tends to complicate cybersecurity in the sense of you might have instances that need to be patched that are not in your own data center. Does that complicate things, or how do you incorporate cloud into your playbook for cyber and into general hygiene?
Well, it certainly depends on the environment. We have different cloud environments. So we have what's called an infrastructure as a service, or IaaS. We provide the squishy stuff, the preventative security measures in the inside. Our cloud provider provides the perimeter defenses. So they maintain the exterior, if you would.
Okay. And
so it does certainly offer some challenges because we have certainly extended our perimeter, but we do rely on some of our cloud vendors to patch their environment.
And by the way, how are you dealing with the Log4j situation? Since I think a lot of people were surprised by the fact that you could have in your log files, of all places, static files, executables, or things that could cause executables to waken up.
So my organization, just like many other federal organizations, spent some quality time remediating Log4j, right? We looked at which systems actually contained that vulnerability. And as you indicated, right, Log4j shows up in libraries, which tends to be more difficult to identify. So we patched our systems. We had to remove some software. We certainly had to take a deeper dive and speak to our vendors and communicate with our vendors because they had to let us know. So we certainly had a very strong campaign to mitigate that threat.
And pursuant to the whole idea of keeping up with patches, as you said, is kind of a pet peeve of yours, or when it doesn't happen, let's put it that way, you're using continuous monitoring and CDM and so forth and all the policy that come from DHS and the general federal cyber policy that are also best practices.
Absolutely. We certainly leverage a lot of the services that the Department of Homeland Security provides. They scan our public-facing assets on a weekly basis. We certainly do that for my team as well. We have a very strict scanning policy. We scan by public-facing, internal-facing. We use credential scans. It's a whole program, again, that we look and we scan, and then we provide those vulnerabilities to the operations teams for them to patch the systems.
And what about encryption? Does that play a role in your whole data strategy and data usage strategy?
Of course it does. Just like anything else, you have to protect the data at the endpoint, right? As a security officer, I am responsible for protecting the data regardless of the location. So once it leaves my organization, I can't protect it very well unless it's encrypted, right? So it really depends on, you know, how far I take that. But I certainly, encryption is certainly part of our what I call our defense in depth strategy, right? It's just another layer. There's no one technology that's going to protect an organization. Encryption is certainly part of that defense strategy.
And the regulated entities that you mentioned, the Federal Home Loan Banks and also Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the entities, they send you data. Their data is their, and their systems are their own responsibility. But in some sense, they constitute a supply chain for you. And so do you have measures to make sure that what they're sending in terms of the reporting and the data they have to send in itself is not carrying anything malicious?
Certainly. We scan all our traffic coming in and out of our network. We have a secure environment where we do collect information from these regulated entities, so it's not coming from the outside. We know where they're coming from. We know their IP scheme, so we know the range. And we have systems that we collect our information that goes into our secure area. We call that the secure DMZ, demilitarized zone, where we go in and grab that information and we scan it before it comes into our environment.
Ralph Mosios, Chief Information Security Officer at the Federal Housing Finance Agency. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Whether you're migrating to the cloud, from the cloud, or between clouds, protecting your data and ensuring business continuity are critical priorities. Veritas can help you build a unified multi-cloud strategy with resiliency at its core to help ensure strategic and mission-critical decisions. Our enterprise data services platform is designed to give government agencies the confidence and control to transform, protect, and optimize your multi-cloud. Visit veritas.com/government for more information.
Welcome back to our interview with Ralph Mosios, Chief Information Security Officer at the Federal Housing Finance Agency. We were talking about cybersecurity and ransomware in particular. Let's talk about visibility of assets, and people, I guess, are looking at assets both in terms of hardware and software these days. Data assets, and you mentioned you'd have to scan the applications. And what do you do in terms of visibility, both for the data end of things and the end-use devices end of things? What's your strategy for visibility into all of your assets to make sure you know the scope of everything you have, especially with more and more people working remotely and so forth? There's the tendency to accumulate hardware endpoints, and so you have to discover those.
Oh, certainly. So we certainly use a number of tools of how we identify our assets. Only assets that have a certificate, our own assets, are allowed on our network. So we know what those endpoints are. We scan those endpoints on a daily basis to ensure that they are patched and maintained, including all of our mobile assets. So that's part, again, of our defense in depth strategy, if you would. So that's from a hardware perspective. We do the same thing on software as well as the data. So we certainly know where the data is coming from, as I indicated before, from, in some instances, from the regulated entities, but also a lot of our data goes into structured databases, if you would. We certainly have areas where we have unstructured data, but we certainly scan the data before it comes into our network.
And do you permit in the architecture data to be stored on mobile devices?
So our mobile devices tend to be, we have phones and every user has a laptop. So they can store it on their laptop. We actually configure the laptop to save it to a network drive, which is our default policy. But certainly users can save it locally, but our backup systems encourage it to, or force it to save it to our network drive. So you really have to be connected to the internet, which goes into our network, of course.
And what about mobile devices?
Mobile devices, I would include, which would be our laptops. We do not store information on our cell phones.
Got it.
Our mobile assets, again, users have the ability to do that, but the default policy is to save it to a network drive.
Yeah, because I'm trying
which protects the end user.
Yeah, we want to differentiate between, when I say mobile device, I mean smartphone, basically, or tablet, versus a laptop, which is mobile, but tends to be treated differently in a lot of systems than smartphones.
It does. And we do not allow storage on mobile phones and on assets and tablets.
And by the way, how many employees are involved? How many do you cover at FHFA, and how many of them are working remotely? And has that changed in the pandemic?
Well, totally, we have roughly 750 employees at Federal Housing Finance Agency, and we are a remote organization. Every employee has a laptop. So roughly less than 30% of the population is going in to the office right now. We're capped at during our phase four going back to the office right now. We're limited to the number of people that can be physically in the office.
All right, so you did go to a greater number of people not being in the office as a result of the pandemic, and not just simply because they were field workers to begin with.
Exactly. Although we do, prior to the pandemic, we certainly had a remote workforce because we do have bank examiners that go on the road. We have examiners that actually physically sit at these other regulated entities at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, as you know. So they are outside our network, but we certainly have technology to protect those assets at those regulated entities.
And you exist in a large federal framework and many other agencies, Treasury components and, the Education Department that have FDIC, don't have the same mission, but they have similar situations in terms of the way the technology is set up, regulated entities, assets outside that they have to oversee and regulate and so forth. Is there a sharing of best practices among the various agencies that have to do with financial systems and loan systems and so on?
So FHFA is an independent regulator, so right. We don't report up directly to anyone such as some of the other financial institutions or regulators, if you would. But we do certainly talk and communicate. I meet with my counterparts at the financial regulators on a quarterly basis. I certainly meet with my counterparts at the regulated entities as well.
They can't tell you what to do.
No, and I can't tell them what to do. It's just we certainly use Chatham House rules, so we share information with no, attribution, if you would.
Got it. But is there any chance of, say, shared services or saying, golly, that's a good practice, let me join you on that one, or is it pretty much just an idea exchange?
It's more of an idea exchange, but we certainly share some of the best practices, and we always, share some of the projects that we're working on. If I'm going to undertake a project, I'll reach out to some of these folks and say, have you moved into the space? Can you make some recommendations? What are your best practices? Do you have any procedures or policies that you could share? And everyone's really good about sharing. I mean, that's really the plus about the community that we have. We share information. We help out each other. Because someone's likely been there before you that could help you, and you could help them.
And let's talk about getting back to the data and the data assets. What is your data backup, your data storage, and your data recovery strategy in general?
So in general, we certainly have a backup and recovery strategy. We conduct tests on our backup and recovery systems. We have administrators that actually test the data as well. It's one thing to back up the system, but if you don't actually test the integrity of the data, then it's essentially like not even having a backup, because as you probably can imagine, backup systems do get corrupted. So it's part of any good playbook is to ensure that you test the backup and the data. So we do back up our endpoints, our laptops. They are backed up to the network. We have what's called an always-on VPN, so our computers, our endpoints are connected and a phone back. I'll call the phone back, but we know we're using DSL lines, but they do connect back to our network, so we could patch and maintain those systems as well. So as part of maintaining, again, that's part of our cyber hygiene program, if you would.
And in your backup and recovery plan, do you have a lot of transactional data that has to have a pretty quick recovery and a recent, recovery time point type of thing? Or is most of your data tend to be maybe historic and that you have less stringent needs to recover to a certain time or data point or time point?
So you're getting into our business impact analysis. So we have a number of data sets, as we talked about before. A lot of it happens to be historical, but we have a lot of analytical tools there where our analysts are conducting their analysis, they're producing reports. So we do have our recovery point objectives and recovery time objectives set and we try to maintain our systems. We are a centrally managed organization, so everything is backed up and recovered essentially at the same time, even though we do prioritize our critical assets.
All right. And what types of conversations happen among the other C people there? You're the chief information security officer. Is there a CIO? And there must be agency executives. Are they all part of the general cybersecurity and in this case, ransomware planning efforts?
Absolutely. So we actually have a strong, what I call a cybersecurity privacy incident response program, where we work with our senior leaderships and our divisions and offices, if you would. We meet more than quarterly per year. We conduct tests as well with the senior leadership. We participate in government-wide exercises, so they are aware quite frequently. A lot of those exercises do contain a flavor of ransomware, where we're walking through how would we respond to a ransomware attack or what would occur, not just specifically from a technology perspective, but how would we talk to the public, in other words. In other words, if we are subjected to a ransomware attack, how can we communicate? Do we have playbooks in place and our messages pre-staged that we could communicate with the outside world, right? As you probably know, ransomware is going to try and encrypt everything connected to your network, so some of your communications may be offline, right? You may not be able to talk to your social media. So what kind of plans do you have in place that you can communicate?
And so far, have you been able to dodge most of the bullets?
Knock on wood, we have not been subjected to any ransomware attacks. Ransomware is something that keeps me up at night. I'm sure many people in my position tend to worry about it. But again, it's all about risk management, right? You cannot protect everything 100% of the time, but there's certainly a lot of preventative measures that you can put in place. There are defensive measures. There's more proactive measures that you can put in place to reduce that risk exposure, if you would.
Ralph Mosios, Chief Information Security Officer at the Federal Housing Finance Agency. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Veritas on Federal News Network.
Whether you're migrating to the cloud, from the cloud, or between clouds, protecting your data and ensuring business continuity are critical priorities. Veritas can help you build a unified multi-cloud strategy with resiliency at its core to help ensure strategic and mission-critical decisions. Our enterprise data services platform is designed to give government agencies the confidence and control to transform, protect, and optimize your multi-cloud. Visit veritas.com/government for more information.